Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards and I'm in Miami, Florida. I'd like to thank Larry and Rachel for recording in Orlando. And, of course, would like to thank Dave Williams. Thank you very much, anyway, for turning our babble into a meaningful radio program. And thank you, finally, to George Byes of Talking Communities, whose software makes Tuesday Topics possible. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about money this evening, but not just money. That would be probably nice if we could have a wonderful investment advice program and somebody would tell us how to make $1 million in a couple of days. I'd certainly be prepared to work at it. But what we are going to talk about instead is how people organize their money, how people keep track of their bank accounts, what people do to keep track of running balances on their checking accounts, what they do to reconcile checking accounts. How much do we use technology? Are we making use of talking ATM machines? Are we using online checking accounts and bill paying systems? And perhaps just as significant, do we know what POS machines are, and are we prepared to use them, or do we shy away from places where they're used? Those are just some of the questions that we hope we'll end up covering tonight. We'll also probably spend some time looking at the pros and cons of the old approaches that folks take with the new technologically weighted ones that are being probably taken by more of us these days. Perhaps it might be good to just go around and ask people to tell us how you organize your money. How is it that you keep track of what you have in the bank and of your checking account and what you have in your wallet as well, if you want to talk about that.
Good evening. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I have a way of telling which is which. On in my billfold, I have a division where I put my fives in the back, and then in the front I have my ones, and then I fold tens if I have them in there. I fold those one way, and the 20s I fold lengthwise, so the tens I fold the other way. But anyway, that's one way I handle my money, is by keeping it, you know, in division, you know, and have a system of knowing which is which.
Hi, this is Brian from Boston. For managing our money in our household, we use a bank, Bank America, who provides us with Braille bank statements. We also use the talking ATMs that are available, again, partly as a result of ACB and ACB affiliate advocacy. We also get many of our bills for standard items such as telephone, utilities, those kind of things, also in Braille, and that helps us manage our finances as well. While our service, our banking service, does come with online banking, we frequently find that that doesn't work for us in the way that we do much of our paying of bills. We do a lot of our bill paying as automatic pay, and anything that isn't automatic, we get together with a reader once a month and go through the bills and write up the checks using raised line checks, keeping track of everything in our note takers. I use a PacMate and my wife uses a BrailleSense.
Hi, this is Chris Schumacher in Dearborn, Michigan. I have a wallet, actually two wallets that I use, one that I carry around with me and then one that I keep in a drawer here at home for cash that is not carried around with me. Both wallets are ones that I buy with a lot of partitions in them. I don't fold the money like a lot of people do. I just have places in the wallet where I keep the various denominations. As for paying of bills, I do bank by phone. I can hear my balances in both of the accounts that I have, and I can pay my credit card bill through that bank by phone system. And I receive the notification of what I owe the phone company by email. And the credit card, I do have a scanner and do read with an opticon, so I'm still reading the print statements.
This is Shelley in Winter Garden, Florida, and I remember when this topic was brought up, I made the comment I had a weakness that I should confess, I guess. I have been fortunate and unfortunate. I have been fortunate to have marriage partners with enough sight to take care of the paperwork and the bill paying and kind of keep the finances in order. Unfortunately, by doing that, I have relinquished my independence in that area. And as far as money, my own cash, if I have any, which I really don't anymore, I don't keep it, but I fold it differently so I can, after someone has told me what I have, I just fold it in such a way that I can tell the difference. But I have been very lax in keeping up with learning to use an ATM, POS machine, which I assume are the point of sale machines in the stores that you, where you slide your card in and you, you know, put in a PIN number if it's a debit. And I have been what I would consider very lax in that area because I've just let someone else do those things for me. Consequently, I don't know how to do it. I don't feel I couldn't learn at all, but I've just never really taken the time and spent the effort to learn how it's done. Banking online, I tried once to get into one of my credit card accounts, and there are codes and things in there that I didn't find it accessible. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get in there.
Credit card companies I use, their websites, I haven't really had any problem going in and checking balances and stuff like that. So pretty much the websites are what I do to keep track of bills. And my utility bills I have set up as e-bills, so they come right into my email instead of post-mail. That eliminates the hassle of trying to scan bills and try to figure out what I owe these utilities and credit card companies and all that stuff. So anything I can get onto e-bills, that's definitely what I do, because then I can see all the details of it without going through the hassle of trying to find somebody sighted or getting it through the scanner and getting past all the graphical characters they like to add to their bills to make them look pretty and all that fun stuff.
Man, that's cool, Larry. You've got it going on.
I am looking for a way to write checks on the computer. I've been doing this for over 5 or 6 years, and I have yet to find a solution to that problem.
Actually, Karen, there are a couple of ways that you can do it. There are a number of programs that allow you to do it. Some of them are commercial programs, and some of them are programs that are specifically designed for blind and visually impaired folks. One program which is designed for sighted folks that does allow you to write checks and that's pretty accessible is a program called Check It. And it actually allows you to write checks. And of course, the I'm having a mind wipe here. Quicken is the program that I wanted to talk about. Actually also allows you to write checks. In addition to that, it is my understanding that the American Printing House for the Blind has just released a program for keeping track of your finances, which, among other things, does allow you to write checks with your computer. Now, you have to buy special checks, and you have to be prepared to put them into your computer correctly. But once you do that, it really is pretty much a breeze. And, of course, with so many of these computer programs, if you want to write checks, you can set them up so that all of the information is actually filled in each time, because that they're sort of standard fields. And the only thing that you have to change after you've got your checks initially set up is to put in the amount that you owe and the date that you're paying the check on. And aside from that, it works fine. And of course, most of these programs will also address an envelope for you if you want them to. So there are a number of pretty accessible programs out there that would actually allow you to write your checks on the computer, assuming that you're prepared to pay the money, and it's a fairly substantial amount of money to get computerized or computer checks, which are available.
It is Larry in Orlando again. Yeah, the software that American Printing House for the Blind put out is called Money Talks. And it's a real nice software. I helped beta test it a little bit, and it you don't even need a screen reader to use it. It has its own speech engine built into it. And yes, you will need the special checks to put into your computer printer, and they do cost a little bit more. But you can import Quicken workbook files and all kinds of stuff with it. It's a pretty nifty little program.
This is Shelley. Is it the general consensus that overall Bank of America is considered the most accessible bank for blind and visually impaired people?
The advantage for Bank of America, and Brian, please feel free to add to this, is that because of the ongoing negotiations that we're having with them, and I want to stress that for the most part, these are friendly negotiations. These are not adversarial. What we've done is we've tried to make ourselves available as ACB and as some ADA attorneys, not to slap the wrists of Bank of America, but to tell them what the law is and to say to them, let us help you. Let's help you find ways. Let us help you test the stuff that you're putting together. And so more and more what's happening, Shelley, and I think this is what makes Bank of America a good bet, is their website is becoming more accessible. There, the number of ATMs that they're rolling out throughout the country is quite immense, and they are still anticipating that every single ATM machine that they control, and they are probably the largest bank in terms of ATM machines, by 2009 will in fact talk, and I think that's a huge revolution. I think it's an immensely important step. But before we pass it to anybody else, so if somebody else is keying, chill out for a little while. Let's pass it to Brian and see if, A, he agrees with me, and, B, if he has anything to add, because Brian and Kim were very close to the negotiations with Fleet Bank before it was acquired by Bank of America. And, of course, Fleet Bank was then local to New England and a Boston-based bank. So, Brian, do you think that what I say is pretty accurate?
Absolutely. Again, the concept of it being a partnership negotiation rather than adversarial is very, very key to what we were able to accomplish with them and continue to work with them. One of the issues associated with banking for everybody, whether you're sighted or not, is the issue of banks acquiring other banks. And you might get comfortable with how you interact with your current bank only to have it bought up by somebody else, and you get to go through a whole new learning experience with them. That is the new owner and all of the arrangements you had made with the old owner. So with Bank of America being the new owner of Fleet Bank, each of them had separate negotiated plans for dealing with issues of accessibility. And as they merged, we've been working with, I think, one of the more important possibilities in all of this accessible banking issue. Yes, they do Braille bank statements, and we end up having to proofread them to a large extent. We actually have received bank statements that had all the bank or check numbers listed and all the payees listed, but none of the amounts listed. So you can't take it as casually, I think, as you might take a bank statement if you were getting them in print, because they are going through a more elaborate process to get to you in accessible format. As Paul said, the website, although it's dramatically better than it was, has still not achieved what I would consider a reasonable amount of effort to do online transactions. And, of course, the ATMs, they're right now here, at least in New England, Every location where there are ATMs, at least one of a bank of ATMs is a talking ATM, and that's marvelous to do. What we're working on in the current settlement as these banks merge is to cut them a little slack as to when they finish doing the whole ATM rollout, and instead put some focus in the interim in putting together training materials. There's so many of us blind and visually impaired people who do not know how to use the banking access that others have advocated for on our behalf. How do you properly use a talking ATM or online banking or understand a bank statement when you've never seen one before? And we're looking to do some good development in terms of training material from our banks to teach us how to use their services.
This is Patty, but I have found being up in the far end of the New England state, hi Brian, is utilizing the small savings and loan banks because they don't tend to get bought out by the big conglomerates. And I've recently been using credit union, which I find trying to be very accessible and very accommodating for my need. Personally, that's why I don't use the big name banks, because there's always that fear of them being bought out by someone else and the new guys don't understand what we're in need of.
Hello, this is Janelle Edwards from Kansas, and I have used a lot of similar types of things that other people have talked about. I am able to access credit card information and that sort of thing online and do financial transactions online. I happen to utilize Schwab and find everything to be accessible except for the charts, which if I tend to want that information, I have the advantage of being able to ask my sighted husband. But normally I can access everything else just fine. And my phone bill and all those kind of things online when I'm the one helping out with that kind of thing. I did have a kind of a question, I guess, for Brian or Paul or whoever, in regard to this sort of thing, the future, which I guess sort of fits into this, that as far as the, I guess the captions are a little bit off topic maybe, but as far as these security keys and some of those types of things that I've begun to read about that some of these banking institutions may be requiring with the numbers that changed every few seconds and that type of things, that have any of these issues gone into the negotiations?
Janelle, I haven't run across a banking website where that's required. All five of the online bill paying systems that I'm using right now, I have the typical kind of username password scenario, and no one has talked about requiring me to do any more than that. I should mention while I have the mic that there are, by the way, huge numbers of scams out there which claim that your access to your online bank has been severely limited because of unwarranted activity on your account. And what often happens is you're asked for information that the outlaws wouldn't have, and if you provide that information, woe is you, because you're going to be in deep trouble. But the other thing that those messages sometimes do, and I actually got caught with this, they actually sent a message to me, care of the credit union that I bank at, and so I thought I. That the attachment would in fact be perfectly safe. Had I thought things through and had I looked at the message carefully, I would have realized that was not the case. And I must also say, and this, while this is an aside, I think it's really relevant for us in terms of what we're trying to do now on the internet. I must say my computer went further than simply saying, are you sure you want to do this? It said, hey, psst, hello. I can't see the whole of this, of the name of this file, and therefore I recommend that you not open it. Well, stupid me, I opened it, and I don't think I've ever had as bad a viral infestation, in fact I know I haven't, on my computer as that created, to the point where it absolutely froze out Norton antivirus. It couldn't run. and it couldn't be updated. And frankly, the only way that I ended up getting rid of this stuff was actually going up onto the internet and downloading an entirely separate virus program and running it. But the reason I raise it here is there are an awful lot of messages that come on the internet that are scare tactics and that seem to suggest, A, that they're pointing directly at you, and B, that there's something majorly wrong in the state of Denmark that you need to fix. And I would suggest to all of you that regardless of what you think of those messages and what their impact might be on you, use your local bank. Call them up. Ask whether they, in fact, have issued any statements. And if they haven't, then be very quick to disregard and delete these messages because they're extremely dangerous.
Okay, this is Janelle again, and I have managed to muddle two issues for you because I was trying to utilize my one time with the mic there. Some people had been talking about captures over on ACBL because people were having trouble getting onto the Blogger site, and then some people with seeing and hearing issues were discussing that sometimes even when people have other ways of getting around captures, that when the speech isn't very clear, that still isn't very helpful to them. And of course, then there are sites like Google where they don't always even provide the captures. And so I guess that's kind of one issue. But then I had raised as a separate issue that I've read some articles recently where people are proposing that some of the financial sites should move away from the username and password type issues into something more secure because of all this phishing like you're talking about, Paul, and into something more secure like the tokens or something like what they're using on the VPNs, which would make me wonder what we would be doing in that arena as far as that type of access.
This is Shelley. I have, first of all, what are CAPTCHAs? And secondly, I do have a credit card where I can't get into their site because they do have some sort of a security code thing that I cannot access, apparently. And what it does, I mean, I can find the link. JAWS will find the link that I should click on. It will tell me what that link is. It just won't activate. It refuses. There's some sort of a security code, and it keeps changing. And I have sent them an email, and I couldn't even get in to read the email, so I had to give my husband the access. It requires a password plus some sort of security code, and he went in there and read their response to me, which was, "We recognize your problem, and we're working on it." And that was a year and a half ago. If I could get that credit card paid off, I'd cut it up.
With respect to CAPTCHA, at the Carroll Center for the Blind computer program that I direct, one of my employees got really seriously bent out of shape over the issues of CAPTCHA, and I don't blame her. She happens to be a sighted person that really hates anything that creates a barrier for blind and visually impaired people to access online content. So she did a bit of researching and eventually found an email address for the guy who invented CAPTCHA and emailed him about our concerns and asked for his assistance, and he's actually now interacting with a number of different entities that have incorporated CAPTCHA to try to work out an accessible CAPTCHA. I'm trying to remember where I saw the first accessible CAPTCHA I ever saw out there, and it allowed you, it said that if you could not see the number or series of characters to type in, that you could click on another link and it would speak it to you in a synthetic voice. Now, the quality of the CAPTCHA text is kind of wavy, if you will, so it will not scan well. So it's not like you could print the page with the CAPTCHA on it, scan it, figure out what the CAPTCHA code is, and data enter it. It has been purposefully distorted to keep scanning from being able to be used in that fashion. However, using the synthetic speech, again, assuming that online strippers of this kind of information, and these are automated systems that swipe your information, and the CAPTCHA is designed to try to avoid that automatic mining, if you will, of private data. The text component that gets spoken aloud is not subject to that kind of automated process. And it worked pretty well for me the one time I had to use it. If you ever come across something like that again, I'd really appreciate it if you could forward it to my email, which is brian.charlson@carol.org, and I'd love to follow up on that.
Shelley, in case it isn't entirely clear, a CAPTCHA is a series of characters that are generated graphically onto a computer screen that a person has to type the equivalent of onto a line before another data window will be allowed to open. They're becoming more and more common now. But their intent is to be certain that the folks who have access to that information appear to be the same people who had requested the email address, because there certainly has in the past been a major disconnect there. What we've discovered so far is that this is not, for the most part, a technologically involved group. So let's look at another issue for a moment. But I'd like to ask if anybody at the moment independently accesses point-of-sale machines.
Yeah, this is Larry. Point-of-sale machines, yes, I do use them at the grocery store. Depends on the machine, and here's the judgment I use on that for security reasons. If the machine has raised buttons, I generally know the keypad layout, and I just have somebody point out which buttons are the debit and credit buttons, and then, you know, of course, I do the number pad and all that stuff. If it is a flat panel machine, I'll opt for credit, so I don't have to give my PIN to anybody. That's kind of the approach I take with that. And then, you know, it's not hard, you know, having somebody show you where to sign the screen, and then that's, you know, then you're done with it.
If I'm by myself, I'll do credit as well. And that raises a question. Should we be required to use credit if we can just do debit?
To answer your question first, Karen, I don't know of any point of service machine or anything else that would preclude you from using debit cards. I think a lot of people in the blind community are using debit cards now because, from their perspective, they meet all the same needs as a check does. And for a lot of local bills, if you're going round and round, they are a lot easier to deal with, I think, for many folks. Obviously, Larry, you're quite right. Grocery stores are one of the most common places where point-of-sale machines are. And these are the machines into which you swipe either a credit card, because they don't really care which, or a bank card, or a debit card. And that card is supposed to be recognized, and the machine is supposed to be given instructions about what the machine needs to do. That isn't always happening in quite the way that it should, because what was beginning to happen was that different companies were developing different kinds of touchscreen approaches to point-of-sale machines. What we've been able to do now is to, I think, refocus the attention of manufacturers of POS machines, as well as large chains that use them, to the necessity of coming up with a system that's going to be universally accessible. It's not possible in a crowded supermarket to do a talking POS machine. It just doesn't work. But overall, I have not found that very difficult to make function. You just have to be careful where you step. We've talked quite a lot about some of these devices and some of these components, but I'm fascinated by the fact that it would appear that most of us here are really not taking advantage of some of the opportunities that we actually have in terms of becoming more independent as bankers. And I'd be interested to know because ACB wrote a resolution this summer, you might remember, that actually focuses on this issue and demands that some training be made available for areas like this. But my question to you guys is, do you have any clear reasons why what I just described would tend to be accurate? That is, why it is that so few of us seem to be all hot to be independent, and so few of us seem to be utilizing the modern systems that can actually enable that independence pretty successfully?
This is Shelley. In my case, I can only speak for myself. I think that in the beginning, well, I should amend what I said earlier when I said I never really had accessed an ATM machine. That's not quite true. When I worked in the hospital in Tulsa, I knew where the machine was, and someone that I worked with taught me how it was laid out and how to use it. And I did use that ATM machine. Since moving to Florida, I have not been using them. And I think the reason probably is having not learned how initially, I've let enough time go by, and now there's a little bit of fear involved. And if there's training, I wasn't aware of it. I would certainly not be opposed to learning it. I'm afraid now because they all seem to be flat panels, and man, if you mess up with your money, you're in bad trouble, and I don't have any anyway.
I think your reasons for not using ATM machines are actually pretty valid ones. I guess I understand that, and maybe some of us who made assumptions about ATM machines and about POS machines might have been over-optimistic. But I guess I find myself here in one of those same situations that I find myself in so often. If we build them, will they come? And judging by this group, the answer to that question is probably not. Not unless somebody provides a lot more training and a lot more understanding and a lot more confidence in the ability to use them. What Cheryl says about locations is correct. The only thing that I would add to that is all of the banks, and there are quite a few of them who are involved in the settlement, have essentially said, we will give priority to any blind person who tells us which ATM machine he or she wants to use, and we'll make that ATM machine accessible. We don't have a problem doing that. We want our talking ATMs to be worth the millions and millions of dollars that we're paying to put them out there. We want blind folks to use them. But this group is not atypical of other groups. And one of the things that that the resolution this summer hopes to accomplish is to focus attention not just on ACB, but on organizations like AER, professional organizations, and also perhaps on people who run rehab centers and people who run training programs, so that the use of talking ATM machines can actually be built in into the programs. I think your reasons, Cheryl, are in fact pretty valid. It would be interesting to know kind of which came first. In grocery stores, often I won't use cashback simply because of the fact that I am dealing with a human being who I have to trust. And I'm also dealing, at least to an extent, with the fallibility of human beings. Not to say that machines aren't fallible, but they're less often fallible. And so I actually find it more comfortable to actually get cash out of ATM machines rather than going to the bank and transacting business that way.
Well, guys, this is Patty again. And as some of you may know, I have the dual sensory impairment, and ATM machines are not always clear, and I do have difficulty differentiating certain letters and numbers. Therefore, I stay away from them. If the day comes where they will make them with perfect, understandable speech, voila, we shall go. As for the supermarket and other stores and their machine, oftentimes I don't hear what the clerks have to say. So if I'm out alone, cash is usually the best way to do it. If I'm with somebody, then I can use a card and I will let them help me through the machine processes. But the combination of machines, mechanical speech, and tellers and clerks who are not very clear or loud enough, it makes it difficult. And I'm willing to bet that there's an awful lot of senior citizens out there who are experiencing similar difficulties. Therefore, they just hand it over to their kids and let someone else take care of their business for them. And consequently, probably at an earlier age than they would normally if they had retained their sight and hearing to perfection.
Paul Edwards, you made a comment about the fact that you don't think we would use them. They're available. Oh, I'm working with Elizabeth Weifel right now on getting a talking ATM at my bank. Not just for me, but just to encourage some other people to be there. I still am going to work with her some more on this. This will remind me to get back on it again. It's been a while since I've talked to her about it, and I will bring it back up.
This is Larry, and if the technology's there, I'll definitely use it, but I can understand, you know, at the same time, everybody's reasons that they wouldn't use it. It would be hard to use a talking ATM if you cannot get to it because of it being in a location that's not very accessible for you to get to due to transportation or otherwise. And if you have a hearing impairment, then that's going to present a problem too. I mean, there's what works for one person is not going to work for everyone else. I mean, there's all kinds of things that still have to be addressed. We still have a ways to go on it, but we have come quite a long way.
Yeah, I think so, too. I believe we have come a long way, yeah. I don't use a talking ATM. I don't use one because, well, I don't use credit cards, and I've never used a POS machine. I do business with people that I trust at the bank and my brokerage firm, and my folks have helped me out with the money, but it isn't that I don't know that I would be against the learning how to use them, but it's just a matter of learning how. I don't know that I'd say I'd never use this technology, and it might be great. And my investment counsel at the bank asked me about doing online banking. Or she just told me that there is that option.
Hi, this is Chris. Don't you think some of it may have to do, too, with safety issues? I've never used an ATM. I've never used a point-of-sale machine. But if they're out in wide-open areas where you're not really sure how many people are watching you put in your PIN number, and the whole security of it, I think, is somewhat what keeps me away from using them.
No, security is an issue, and certainly when they lay out ATMs and other machines, they try to place them in such a way that an individual can't see what it is you're pushing on the panel. Also, the screens that they use are such that you have to be immediately in front of it in order to see it. Even a 5-degree off true 90-degree connection to the screen will cause you to look at that screen and think that it's blank. You have to really look straight in on it for it to work. Paul, you were saying that clearly in point-of-sale machines that you weren't going to be able to create a talking one. I think that probably we will see talking ones. At the Perkins School for the Blind in their museum, they've just installed a spotlight speaker system from Bose. And in that spotlight speaker system, you can be standing right next to somebody who's not wearing headphones, and they can be hearing something from a speaker that you can't hear. The sound can be directed in such a way that only one person can hear it at a time. they have to stand in the sweet spot to hear it. Nobody around them can hear it. I imagine eventually we're going to be moving to that even for talking ATMs over the course of the next 5 to 10 years.
This is Larry in Orlando, and I would agree with Brian on that. I would think you can definitely put machines in there like that. And, you know, most of the ATMs now, you have to bring a headset, but I would think at some point they could hardwire a headset in there so nobody would walk off with it. You know, that would be easy enough to do, and then you can listen to the transactions on the headset and have the privacy of that. And those machines are small enough to where you could hover over them in such a way where unless somebody really is digging their head in front of you, they're not going to see what you're keying in there.
I think Brian's point is well taken. Brian, I guess my objection with regard to POS machines, certainly, and even probably ATM machines, is I think you eventually reach a limit in terms of how much it is legitimate and appropriate for you to expect an entity like a bank to put into their machines in terms of expensive materials. Larry, I'm glad they don't have hardwired headphones because I think that would actually be a deterrent. I suspect there are loads of people out there who wouldn't want to put headphones on that somebody else had worn in the first place. And in the second place, I think you're inviting vandals to simply come up and cut the wire off right inside the thing so nobody can use it. They walk off with a nice pair of headphones that they can hook up to something or other. I just don't think it would survive. My issue with regard to point-of-sale machines for both Brian and Larry, since you guys are advocates here to a degree, is with the talking ATM machine, you're actually talking about a device that's pretty expensive. I mean, you're talking about a threshold cost at the very low end of probably $3,000 to $4,000 for a single ATM machine. And that doesn't cover installation and security issues and cameras and the whole nine yards. So you're looking at a pretty huge expenditure of dollars. But with a POS machine, you're probably not talking about a device that costs more than $25 or $50. And I'm not sure that people are going to be prepared to pay the significantly higher tariff to get something like you're talking about, Brian. I just don't think we can expect companies to, unless we determine that somehow we're going to elect officials that will do precisely what we want. But let's pause for a minute. Let me ask Brian and Larry to comment on the objections that I've raised and see if you guys buy into them or not.
And this is Larry. Yeah, I would agree with I wasn't thinking about putting a hardwired headset on a ATM. I was thinking that for more of a POS machine. And yeah, I would agree with your point on, you know, not wanting to wear headphones that somebody else wore. As far as the Sonic talking one, that's a pretty nice idea. I mean, the technology's already there. I don't really see it costing a whole lot more than what the POS machine is now to add that function. I mean, if this was brand new technology, I could see that. But, you know, we've had talking chips out there now for decades. So, you know, it's just a matter of integrating that, and it's just coming up with just the logic for somebody to do that. And that's, I don't see that as a big problem anymore nowadays. I mean, you could just about any electronic display there is now, you could easily make it talk if you put in the chip and code it.
Paul, if the only thing it did was gain access to persons who are blind or visually impaired, I think you'd be right. But we're getting farther and farther away of a requirement that all machines transact their business in English. We're going to a very much multilingual kind of society. And I don't mean people who speak multiple languages. I mean people who expect machines to interact with them in their language, whatever that language might be. And this audio system being a mainstream process, I think, has some real potential. Certainly there's a price point issue, but the price point is almost driven by the cost of labor, not by any other thing. And as labor goes up in cost and technology comes down in cost as a result of scale of manufacturing, I think the two are going to intersect.
I guess I'd like to look for a minute, if we could, at the other issue, and that is we've gone out there pretty heavily and said to banks, we would really like it if you would make your websites accessible, and an awful lot of them have. I use a relatively small credit union, and I'm able to access and enter payees for bills and set up specific dates that I want these bills to be paid. And with a little practice, the website is very much accessible. It is not an issue at all. I guess I'm wondering why more people wouldn't just jump up and down to be able to do that. And the same thing applies to email bills. I love being able to get my phone bill and my credit card bills and all the other bills that I get as email, so that for the first time in my life I can really quickly take a look at what they say. I can go onto their website and get more detail if a transaction looks weird. I can tell that really easily. And I think that there's a lot that I gain from perceiving myself, whether it's actually true or not, as being significantly more independent using this technology and using some of the other options that are out there today. I think certainly makes me feel as though I'm more technologically independent and more financially independent. I guess I'd make two points. One is, one of the reasons why this is so important to me is I'm not sure that I want a reader looking at my bank statement. I don't want somebody who's entirely outside of my family, who I may or may not know very well, to know how much money I have in which banks, where that money is, and potentially something that they could go blabbing to the whole community if one in fact hired a reader from the community where one traveled. So that's one of the cons, at least from my perspective, with continuing in the same old way. And the other thing that I would say is sort of to Chris Ann, I thought the telephone bill pay was cool, Chris Ann. I thought it was the best thing since white bread. But as you probably already know, it's getting rarer and rarer and less functional. And it appears to be a technology that people thought would happen but really didn't. And perhaps it's true to say that the banking industry, perhaps more than any else, has floated technological balloons that either have worked spectacularly or have worked pretty spectacularly as well.
You know, there's some people out there that just aren't, for one reason or another, are not real computer literate, and they get real afraid of dealing with the internet websites. So I would hope that a lot of these companies would stick with the phone bill, you know, the telephone pay as an alternative, but unfortunately a lot of them aren't. I don't know how we could keep them on the phone. Telephone pay is an option.
We've talked a lot about money and organizing money, and we've talked about some software. We have not talked about any of the software that can be used for investment purposes on the internet. We haven't had, I think, very much of a discussion on the other issue that's obviously connected with this, which is, why is it that any of us have to fold our money in the 21st century in the United States of America, when well over 100 countries throughout the world have already found ways to enable blind people to identify their bills? I would guess from this group that there are very few, if any, of us who balance our checkbook completely every month. If you balance your checkbook every month, say yes, and then unkey so somebody else can say yes if they want. But it's just democracy in action. So go for it, guys.
Yes, I reconcile monthly.
Oops, cool. Thank you, Janelle. So Janelle appears to be the only one of us who does that. I know I don't. I keep an eye on it so that if it begins to look a little strange, I can immediately jump on it and find out why. But I do not attempt to reconcile every month. And I'm told that I probably lose myself about 150 or $2 a year, which is a shame. I hate to throw it away. After all, it would buy me about a tenth of a haircut now. I think there are some other issues with regard to handling our money that actually arise and that really weren't discussed in this program. And one of those is, how clearly do we really understand both our rights and our options with regard to money? For how many people tonight was 508 psychobabble when we talked about it as it applied to certain entities here? Because I think these are really important issues. I agree with Brian that we're going to see some huge steps ahead over the next few years in the way that we do banking. Brian, I would suggest to you, though, that based on what's already out there, the most likely scenario is to transmit directly from where you are to the studio. But it's for me, the whole issue of how we're using money or not using accessible approaches to making money work for us is a fascinating topic, and I think that there are still a bunch of areas where I think many of us have an awful lot to learn. I'd be interested, for instance, in seeing how many copies of the APH software is out there. I know that our former executive director, Charlie Crawford, wrote a really cool program that enabled people to keep track of their checkbooks. And actually, in his very last module that he wrote, you were able to print checks. That was a really cool program, and the coolest thing about it, of course, was that it was free. And I guess the other thing that I'm surprised that I haven't heard tonight is I haven't heard anybody talk about the use of electronic technology like Braille Notes and Braille Light Millennia and Braille Senses as aids in note-taking. When I first got my Braille and Speak, and at least to a degree ever since then, I try to keep a kind of a running tally of the checks that I know have been written in my household by simply using one of the memories in the calculator of these units, so that it's not very accessible to folks, and even if it was, they wouldn't know what they were looking at. And so having this strange number in a particular number of the calculator actually has worked really well for me, and I don't know if anybody else is using that kind of approach in order to kind of keep at least some idea of approximate current situations in terms of banking balances.
This is Rachel, and I actually do use that. I use a note taker, and I will go online with credit card information, and I will keep track of balances and that kind of thing.
This is Chris, and I'm wondering if some of the problem we have is, at least with me, when you're talking about information as important as your finances, is this question of computer dependence and whether or not you use a talking checkbook program or go online to pay bills. There's always that question of what happens if something's wrong with the computer. With my bills that I get by email, there is a way to find out over the phone what those bills are, and I have had instances where either it's been a computer email downtime or whatever, where there is this question of what's the backup plan? How do you keep the records from the software? Do you print them out if you don't have a Braille printer, et cetera, that the computer dependence question is something that I'm going through right now. I'd love to use some of those services, and we do have them available here. But I ask myself, how much do I want to have in the computer in case I can't use the computer?
Just how we use our money and just how we organize it aren't nearly the easy questions that we thought they might be. What they are, however, is a clear indication that there are ways and means that blind people can become fairly independent of outside assistance in terms of the way they manage their money and in terms of they keep track of what they have and what they spend. I believe, and I think that it was implicit in what many said tonight, that such a capacity for privacy ought not to be a privilege, but ought to be construed as a right. I think every person in this society has the right to look at his or her bank statement, his or herself, without him or herself, without anybody else being any wiser. And I think technology allows us to come to that today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in to Tuesday Topics. We hope that you will join us next week for another stimulating discussion. In the meantime, this is Paul Edwards in Miami on behalf of Larry and Rachel in Orlando, and, of course, on behalf of George Buys, the founder of Talking Communities. Thank you to all of you for making this program possible, and thanks to you who participated and to you who listened for making this program viable. Good night. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we're going to explore accessible recreational items for the blind. While we may concentrate on accessible games, and specifically accessible computer games, we also hope to look at things that you can buy right in a store. I think you'll be surprised at just how many games there are out there that are easily playable by people who are blind. And I think you'll also find that there are a range of devices that are being made now which are perfectly usable by the blind, though they were categorically not made for use by people who are blind. So join us as we discuss accessible recreational devices on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.